The gist. When we look back, 2024 might just be perceived as a year of fundamental progress. In study after study, two general themes popped up again and again. ME/CFS patients' cells across their bodies are exhausted and inhibit a failure to respond when exposed to stress. An early study, for instance, found in what the author stated constituted a profound disruption, that important signaling factors called extracellular vesicles became activated about one-third as much as the healthy controls did after exercise. Next, a UK-Australian bee study demonstrated that when asked to proliferate, something that happens during an infection, the bee cells of the ME/CFS patients displayed their own kind of profound disruption, i.e., they produced fewer mitochondria and turned to a dirty and inefficient fuel, amino acids, to try to produce energy. Talk about profound. Avindra Nath's finding that bee cells were stuck in an immature stage bothered him so much that he concluded they were, quote, the primary defect, end quote, in ME/CFS. He believes they produce immune exhaustion and, via activation of innate immune responses, inflammation. For his part, Anthony Komaroff spoke of an immune system that seemed to be spinning and spinning, causing it to eventually burn itself out. Vishnu Shankar of Stanford agreed. His finding of high rates of reactive oxygen species, or free radicals, linked to T-cell hyperproliferation suggested that a chronically activated immune system was using up so much energy that it had created an energy sink for the rest of the body. Exhaustion was the linchpin of a metabolomic study that proposed that as their mitochondrial resources were exhausted, females in particular became more prone to coming down with ME/CFS. Meanwhile, the Cimarron Research Foundation found that low oxygen, i.e. low energy levels, produced a melange of familiar problems, increased oxidative stress, impaired lipid synthesis, problems with tissue repair, and pathogen killing. ME/CFS patients' brains appeared to be in a similar fix as blood oxygen levels suggested that the brain's voracious appetite for energy was causing it to strip as much oxygen from the blood as possible. Another seconded that notion when it showed that instead of adapting to a task and using less energy like the healthy controls did, the ME/CFS patients' brains actually used more energy to accomplish the same task. I.e., when given a task, their brains appeared to be in a hypermetabolic state that would lead to a crash. Cellular exhaustion reared its head again when Younger found elevated lactate levels throughout the brain in a subset of ME/CFS patients, suggesting the brain had exhausted its resources, run out of oxygen, and was burning other fuels to keep it going. Nath's findings of reduced cerebral spinal levels of dopamine metabolites and a serotonin precursor, or DHPG, hit at yet another potential metabolic issue, decreased catecholamine biosynthesis, once again suggesting that the brain was running low on vital resources. With that, it appeared that both the brains and immune cells of ME/CFS patients had fallen prey to the same problem. Both were running out of resources and had resorted to operating anaerobically and/or using inefficient fuels to fuel them. An African green monkey virus study suggested how this may be happening. It found that the energy demands of people with long African monkey virus syndrome soared in the early stages of the infection, creating a hypermetabolic state in their immune cells. Patients whose immune cells couldn't meet the metabolic demands were forced to turn to alternative anaerobic energy pathways, glycolysis and pyruvate metabolism, to generate energy and were sicker. Indeed, 30 days after the pathogen had apparently been vanquished, an energy maladjustment had occurred, leaving them in a state of metabolic insufficiency. The conclusion? An inability to produce enough energy during the infection overloaded the mitochondria, damaging them, and leaving their cells in a low energy state. An October conference presentation suggested that the hypermetabolic-hypometabolic pattern may be happening in the muscle cells as well. When muscle tissue was exposed to serum from ME/CFS and long COVID patients, the muscle's ability to contract or produce force or generate energy became severely compromised. Highly elevated levels of mitochondrial and non-mitochondrial oxygen consumption suggested that the serum had put the muscle cells under huge energy stress. Ultimately, the mitochondria began to break up, fuse, and become dysfunctional, causing the muscle tissue to rely on, you guessed it, an alternative energy source, anaerobic energy production. The authors hypothesized that a stress-induced hypermetabolic state resulted in severe deterioration in muscle cell functioning. Just last month, Hansen's group published a paper that added a new and potentially significant factor to the cellular exhaustion discussion, epigenetics. Epigenetics refers to how our bodies regulate our gene expression over time. Because infections can be big drivers of epigenetic change, the idea that an epigenetic change triggered by an infection might be causing ME/CFS, long COVID, post-treatment Lyme disease, etc., has always been an enticing possibility. The study found that the T cells in ME/CFS had become epigenetically predisposed towards terminal exhaustion, given the cellular exhaustion found in B, NK, and muscle cells. One wonders if epigenetic reprogramming may be present in them as well. This study has major implications for ME/CFS and will be covered in an upcoming blog. At the end of 2024, we're at a very interesting place. Again and again, we saw studies circling around familiar issues: mitochondrial dysfunction, cellular exhaustion, blood vessel and clotting issues, high levels of oxidative stress, and lipid dysregulation in a variety of cells. All these seem to cohere around the idea of a failure to respond to a stressor, and suggest that a hypermetabolic state triggered by an infection ultimately produces a hypometabolic state characterized by cellular exhaustion. Despite our low funding, this was a good year for ME/CFS, as the field seemed to tap into a deep and rich vein associated with reduced energy production.